My name is Arizuma Sini, and it's a great pleasure introducing tonight's program with Jeanette Bink, Emily C.M. Anderson, Bella Borsodi, Keitra Dean Dixon, and J.K. Keller. We're here to celebrate the publication of 3D typography with a discussion and book signing. The stunning publication showcasing physically shaped project was created as a direct reaction to so much of today's typography conceived via screens. Jeanette Bink opened the design studio Rational Beauty in 2008 and was previously the founding creative director at Dwell Magazine. She has also served as a designer and art director for numerous publications, including the New York Times and Martha Stewart Living. Emily C.M. Anderson is a graphic designer who has worked for magazines such as American Craft and Dwell. She co-designed the book Brooklyn Modern for Rizzoli and was a recipient of an Art Directors Club Young Gun 6 in 2008. Bella Borsodi studied fine arts and graphic design in Vienna before becoming a photographer and moving to New York in 1992. He has focused on still life photography since 1999. Keitra Dean Dixon is a designer and artist who works under the handle From Keitra. Her socially themed projects have gained notoriety for their friendly absurdist and whimsical tone. J.K. Keller is an artist and designer. His work is a hybrid of design, code, and craft. Through incorporating logical systems, his work focuses on transcending the everyday via the everyday. I'd like to thank our guests for appearing on tonight's program. Copies of 3D typography are available for purchase and signing right after the Q&A session at the end of tonight's program. Also, I'd like to encourage everyone tonight in this room to visit the art and picture collections at Mid-Manhattan Library across Fifth Avenue from here, where you can freely browse a circulating collection of 40,000 books and videos covering every aspect of art, architecture, and design, and over 1 million pictures covering 12,000 subjects. Thank you all for your attendance, and now it's time to turn the floor to Jeanette Bink, Emily C.M. Anderson, Bella Borsodi, Keitra Dean Dixon, and J.K. Keller.
Thank you. Thank you. Great. Well, thank you, everyone, for coming tonight. And our lovely contributors also for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much for coming out tonight. And thank you, Arizu, for inviting us in the New York Public Library. Okay, she's already introduced us, but I'm Jeanette and this is Emily.
Hello.
Yep.
And our lovely contributors.
Yep. And we just wanted to give you a little bit of backstory about. Oh, we also wanted to thank Carrie Jacobs for writing our amazing intro, and Amber Bravo, who's here. If you want to raise your hand, Amber. She helps us with all of the captions and made them very informative. So she added an extra layer of information that we really enjoy. And we also wanted to thank Mark Boddy for publishing the book and giving it a home. Special thanks to Buzz, Christopher, and Jake, and Taylor, who's here with us tonight. So now we're going to give you a little bit of the backstory on American Craft and how the project began. Ironically, this project started with a two-dimensional project with the redesign of American Craft. And that's where Emily and I met 3 years ago. So for a redesign, one of the most challenging things is to come up with a new identity for the magazine. So we wanted to start one of the attributes of the magazine, we wanted to start creating 3D typography for the headlines because it related to the interior of the magazine. So issue after issue, we would look for different inspiration from around the world, and we started tacking up projects on our wall. And as the wall became full because of magazine, with magazine publishing, it's never ending, we decided we had enough material for a book. And that's how the book presented itself. So we made type out of sugar, we made type out of wood, we made type from CNC. So we started experimenting with different material, and so
kind of brought us to just became really aware of this happening, and started to kind of collect our sources and names and get familiar with people, and we kind of pulled together a kind of a presentation and found a publisher. So,
and we felt like when we were doing the initial research that we were seeing people getting their hands dirty, making things from letters out of moss to human skin. So once you get started looking for stuff, you start realizing that the potential letters are everywhere, just waiting to be like carved and knitted and grown, melted, molded, hammered, and you know, somewhat reclaimed. So that was the premise of the magazine, the premise of the book, but which was the research from the magazine.
So yeah, this what we've just shown is just some of the 3D type headline treatments, and then in their final home, in their layouts. So we also kind of wanted to talk about how the book kind of took shape. After collecting, you know, first you cast your net wide and you find all of these people and designers and photographers and architects and craftspeople, and, you know, you're just culling as much information and visual resources as you can. Then you kind of have to start editing it. And then there's the people who want to be involved and people that aren't sure, and slowly you kind of get this big pile. And one thing that we talked about and thought about was really how do we present this information and how do we put it in a container and take someone on kind of a similar journey through it visually versus alphabetically, for instance, or just by artist or just by person. I mean, I think what I love about people working three-dimensionally is just it's experimental. I mean, most people are working a little off of their comfort zone. So we decided, after printing out huge contact sheets, we just started to cut it apart and start to group things visually. So it was really kind of an organic process. So I'm going to take you through some of that. Also, another thing, when you're making your own book, you know, we also wanted to have it have a very quiet architecture, because we really wanted the work inside to come through. So one, how we kind of developed the chapter dividers as well as the cover was actually had the letters laser cut and then submerged them in white paint, working with some really great photographers, M36. Here's some of the in-process shots, 2 days, and a lot of white house paint. But I think it really just hints to the dimensional, to it being dimensional versus reading as something more. I almost like the shadow and the shape that it casts more than it being this big set. So the first chapter of the book is people using paper or two-dimensional forms to create the three-dimensional form.
And we also, as we were curating the book, we wanted to really show the work and not so the work would come forward and not be about the artist. So it was our intention not to like group like all of the artwork by a certain artist in one section. So you would see one artist sprinkled throughout the publication. So it would become more about making and about the project opposed to the person.
This is someone who works mostly in paper in Paris. This is a New York artist, New York and Berlin, and he works a lot with song lyrics. That's kind of his inspiration. This person is based in Paris, and this is all hand-cut paper, which I think is just really amazing. A little more playful interpretations. An Israeli artist and designer. This is one of my favorites. And kind of so that we chose to kind of start with that because it's a really humble material that kind of transforms into, I think it's a subtle transition. And I think the next one was just using continuous, the idea of something linear, and then using that to kind of create your shapes. This was done the type workshop, which is run by the Type Foundry Underwear. And these were all very short experiments done by a collection of students. So I think another interesting part about the way that people are using and working with it is that, like I said before, it just becomes rather experimental. And we really kind of hope to capture that spirit. Letters woven with yarn. This is all embroidered. We also found a lot of people using the nature, their environment, their own body, organic elements, to then create typography. This is a craft artist, Jen Lockey. She's been creating work for decades. and this is also another favorite, I think. Well, they're all my favorite, but she spent years combing the beaches for stones and then kind of rearranging them into these alphabets. Using kind of a urban graffiti or a moss to do installations. Facial hair as letters. This is an in-process for a book cover by the studio Autobahn. Using your own hands. This is using Google Earth and combing it for instances where there's letters. He created an entire alphabet based, I believe, on the, if not a state, if in New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Happy New Year wishes, hair, eyelashes, and skin. This is a choreographer.
Dance performance where people come apart to make sayings and
this is Dress Your Own Letter project for a clothing shop.
Yeah, for promotion.
Using your own legs. And I think maybe the largest section of the book is found objects, people using just different elements. This is a really epic piece by Stefan Sagmeister, using 1 euro cent and some very patient volunteers. This installation went up, and I believe someone...
took a week to install.
It took about a week to install, and someone... they noticed someone started taking the pennies and collecting the money, and the police, their way of stopping it was to sweep it all up to protect it. I believe it was rather short-lived. This is collecting the pieces.
It's in Amsterdam.
It's a good project for a library.
Some of the type letter forms wouldn't really be an alphabet unless you saw all of the alphabets in a series, which I always find that interesting, like Clotilda.
This is a project where students were asked to collect their trash for a week, and then the letters were then generated from that collection. This is a California-based designer who, a lot of his projects, he reappropriates elements. This one using the safety handles to kind of create an alphabet. Another piece from the type workshop using open books. And this was she actually created a Good Morning. Every morning with something new. Just huge body of work. This is another New York artist.
Chewing gum. Mm.
These are all film stills from a music video in which every lyric of the song was created with different typographic treatments. It's really cool. This project all kind of evolved around vices. This nail is being soaked in Coca-Cola until they were rusted. Smoked cigarettes with non-smoked cigarettes and French fries. This is kind of the last chapter was people actually just generating and building the letters from raw materials. This is Andrew Byram, kite lettering. Another more modular piece. a ceramic artist. So the collaboration between an architect, carpenter, and illustrator, designer Mike Perry. I think they only got as far as the vowels. These last two are both kind of clocks, typography inspired by clocks. So that's kind of how the book came together, and a showcase, I'd say, of a lot of the contributors, not quite any of the people yet here tonight. And we also have a blog where we're trying to keep up with a lot of our contributors, as well as showing more projects as they kind of come along. So I think Bella Borsodi is going to talk about his piece, Alphabets. Yes, I'll pull that up.
Hello? No, it works. Okay, perhaps let's look first at the piece.
Yep. One second.
Not it? Not it?
Not.
Yes.
Okay, so that's the first part of a piece. I was asked by a magazine in Paris, Ward Magazine, to work on an editorial where the theme of this whole issue of Ward was about alphabets. So every artist who wanted to contribute there was given a letter, and then they were free to do whatever with it. I was given the letter A, and I thought of alphabet, and I wanted to basically show an alphabet in my own environment. And that actually comes from from some work that I was doing like already in 2003 with Stefan Sagmeister, who he also showed like pictures there, and which work is also in that book, where I collaborated with him he has this long project where he says things I've learned in my life, where he wanted to illustrate sentences visually, and I was working with him on the one where we wrote this sentence in six different photographs by being very realistic. Where we're just writing things in nature and that this was very similar to this. And in 2004, I was doing yet another project for a magazine where I was writing revolution in photographs. And then when Ward asked me to do that, I thought of revisiting this whole thing again and being a little bit more elaborate as I was before, and also to introduce people in this world, because in these images, which you will see in a second. And this is my apartment. So does this work here? Yeah. So that's the letter L. That's the letter P. It's my girlfriend. H, my kitchen. That's A. That's B. And that's the stylist, Kari Endogout, who I was working with. If you can see, here she is, there. That's also my girlfriend. It's me, and that's the letter S. So the whole thing says alphabets because I wanted to take it this assignment very literal, and that's what I can say about this.
I guess I have a question.
Yeah.
Bale is an agent, so sportswear magazine. And how much time did you have when they sent you the product that was going to be in the magazine to work with? How much time did you have to make this up?
Like after I figured out the concept of what it is that I wanted to do, we just got product delivered that we had to integrate in these photographs, and I would say about like 2 to 3 letters a day was what I was doing. I mean, all that is done through perspective of the camera. So usually I set up a camera and move the things around in the space that they optically meet the eye of the camera to form the letter. If you step just like a little bit left or right, you will totally lose the perspective of it, and it will be a mess. And I think about like 2 weeks or 2 months after. I think about 2 months after that, I did yet another project, which was not published here because it's not about letters. But I made a shape of a girl reclining on my desk, also in the way of fooling perspective. Very very similar to this big A, also in the same room, and that took me, oh my God, this took me more than 2 weeks to do one photograph.
Wow.
So I like the idea that any of these images becomes really an experience, something, an adventure, that I have a good idea of what I want to achieve, and I go about it, but then it just naturally takes on turns and leads me to other solutions of how I can find these things. So they become very organic. I try not to, as much as I try to be precise about them, I just don't want to be too clean about them either. I want this really to be an experience, and also to share with the image the idea that this was really done for real, thought for real, and labored for real. So, yeah. Any other questions, or shall we do this after?
I think we're doing Q&A.
Hello.
There. I'm gonna hide behind the podium. Also, so I can conceal the cards that I have.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Keitra. Okay, so I thought a little bit about why I tend to so heavily to do 3D type. And I started out with the flat kind. And I think I developed an initial affinity for doing typography in general as a way to try to develop a sort of reciprocal relationship with words. Like, I'm kind of klutzy with words, as you can tell, in general, but I'm a little bit better with visuals. So, Emily was telling me about this lovely quote that the woman who did the stone alphabet had. She says that she's trying to make friends with the type.
Yes.
Which I think is a brilliant and simple way to put it. That's exactly what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make friends with the type and develop this kind of give and take relationship, a way to explore a little bit more. And I'm always looking for understanding in my work through usually connection or exchange and starting a conversation in ways. And I do that in platforms, for conversations, records of exchanges, and trying to create new dialogues with an unseen audience. And I even go as far to anthropomorphize objects so I can start to have a conversation with them. So I think actually dimensionalizing the type was a natural progression of all of this, and partnering type with object to obviously create new meaning, but as a new way to explore and experiment and make friends with the type. So recently I've been focusing on pairing words and non-traditional materials and kind of upping that level of unexpected and surprise and adding to the conversation. And a good example of an early material study was featured in the book. And it was a project that J.K. Keller, that guy over there, I'm actually married to him, so we do some work together. We were invited to do this dimensional... Well, no, we were invited to do a typographic piece for a show in Chicago. And we decided that we wanted to do an object, and we wanted it to embody or reflect an emotional state and show evidence of experience or time passing. And it was a good opportunity to do material exploration. So we chose the act of dwelling on something or someone as the emotional state, and we developed a process that kind of reflected that state, and it was more about letting that process play out. So we chose wax as the material, and we chose to actually physically layer the wax onto positive type forms. So this is an example of the test. We wanted to make sure that we could actually pull the positives out of the layered wax initially. And then we went about hacking together this layering station, which I don't have a good shot of. It was very unstable, but there's a found shelf that created a grid, and then the positive laser cut type, and then a catching bin to collect the excess wax as we hand swabbed the wax onto the layers, and then of course a stove that's bubbling over with pots and colored wax. And so we set it all up and started manually layering the wax on layer after layer. And initially, it looked pretty good. And sorry, this is intense. So this was what I called the glazed donut phase. And in my opinion, glazed donuts are kind of an epitome of aesthetics, so I was happy. But then it took an unexpected turn, and things started to get really ugly really fast. And I'm the type of person who you can't give a birthday present to early because I'm going to rip that sucker open right away. I have no control over my curiosity. And then also maybe I'm a little bit of a control freak when it comes to designing stuff. So I was nervous. And of course JK was totally fine because he's really laid back, which drove me crazy. So we were up against a deadline, and there were no do-overs. We just had to get the thing to a certain state. And I got to the point that I couldn't stand it anymore, so we flipped the thing over and cut it open. And that's the final one. So I was relieved. It actually doesn't photograph as nicely as it looks in person. In person, it was... I was happy to see that it was kind of opulent. And there's a nice quality to the paraffin that we use that when you color it, it becomes opaque. And then the light layers, the white paraffin, have a level of translucency to it. So there's this undulating depth in this kind of geode form. So we called it "I've Been Thinking of You for a While," and it was well received, and we were commissioned to do a second one. And I called this one the Swamp Nugget because on the outside it kind of looked like a dinosaur egg. But okay, so and this example comes from my most recent material obsession. I'm partnering materials with type extrusions, or as I call them, the type squishers. So with these, I'm trying to synthesize the evolution of meaning that's inherent to communication. So initially, when we're communicating, we start out with this intended internal meaning and relatively tight control over our words, depending on who we are. And then we put the message out there into a space or context that's unique, and our each utterance is unique. And then, of course, the interpretation on the other end varies tremendously. And So I'm trying to build off of that inextricable signal-noise relationship that's going on, and the exchange between the two. At what point does the noise actually become the signal, and vice versa? And so these guys are super teeny extrusions. They're a half inch tall. And of course, we all know that materials behave very differently on different scales. And my dream in the long run is to actually do a ginormous type extruder, or, well, people-sized at least. So in this example, they would be a foot tall. And of course, this is very much a dream right now. Like, will take a lot of maneuvering to get it actually functioning and installed. I would love to have it installed in a public space, maybe by a little pony wall of multicolored bricks of different materials that people would be invited to feed into the extruder. And so on top of replicating that like flawed and unpredictable beauty that's inherent to communication, I would hope that aspects of participation and play and an ongoing discourse would be added to the unexpected qualities of the materiality itself. And then I just have two more examples of the other material studies that I'm excited about. So this was an extrusion that's an inch and a half tall. And I think it's starting to do something interesting at this point, because if you can see in the lower left-hand corner, you can actually, it's legible. And so that's the letter forms that are closest to the extrusion machine. And then there's this dissipation of the communication trajectory. And I think that's relatively reflective of, you know, the replication of communication, where our utterance is varies tremendously on the forces that it's being interjected into. And then the biggest one, these guys aren't as long as I would wish them to be, but these are 5-inch tall letter forms. And one material, so this is just air dry clay, and my next step is to vary the coloration and do it with soft silicone. So I have buckets of silicone waiting to be colored in my basement. Yay. The end.
Hello. So I'm J.K. Keller, and just a little background. I'm a designer and artist, as they said, working out of Baltimore with Keetra. I come from Minnesota. I went to RISD, the Rhode Island School of Design, for a year. Finished up my undergrad at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design. And I was doing mostly interactive multimedia, so a lot of computer-based work. After that, I worked for 5 years as a Flash developer in New York City. And then in 2005 or so, I went to Cranbrook, which is where I met Keetra. And then was in the 2D design department there, moved back to New York City, and now we both live in Baltimore. And I still do like web design. So I don't really normally do physical typography. I'm more of a computational guy, and I'm also just best known for like a self-portrait project that I've been doing for the past 12 years of taking a portrait every day. And I point this out for a couple reasons. One, because people ask me that, and I just want to get it out of the way. Second is, it actually speaks about my typographic work that I do. First, because I'm super interested in collection. I love the motivation of like what a person decides to collect. The second is that this embodies like a sort of a micro-macro paradoxical union. So it's a lot of small things made up into a larger whole, which you'll see later on is something that I'm interested in terms of typography. And then the third thing is that this is an ongoing process. I don't know if I've ever really finished any work that I've done. It's always about processy and evolution. And so that's why I point that out. So the first project I'm going to talk about, I'm going to kind of go through the actual physical things that I have done and then move to computation, because I think they have some really nice corollaries, because there's a lot of experimentation. And then the thought processes are really, really similar. So this is one of my strange collections. I take matchbooks that I find on the street. This is a box of them. And, you know, I've been doing this for probably like 12 years. No idea why. Inexplicable, totally. And then one day I kind of came upon one that looked like it was giving me the bird. And I was like, wait, that looks like a hand, right? So I went home and I started crafting matches into hands to see if it would work. And from there, I created an entire American Sign Language fingerspelling alphabet, plus the inspiration, which is not technically ASL. And so it kind of highlights a couple key issues in my working process, in that if you let an irrational compulsion incubate long enough, it can turn into something fruitful, and that's something I totally believe. And so a lot of the experiments that I do don't make a lot of sense, and I don't have a real, you know, like, reason to do them, but I really trust in the process that they will turn into something that is slightly interesting. And then second, I'm much more interested in taking existing objects, reacting to those, and transferring them into something that's not the intended role. So obviously these are not meant to be hands. And this was just kind of another little play on that. So I come from a computer background. I see pixels in real life all the time, and I'm always interested in like turning those into type, right? Because type is made up on the computer of pixels a lot of times. And so you saw probably in their presentation a lot of people doing fence stuff, and so this was like first, like, oh, I want to do, you know, fence type, whatever. Very zeitgeisty, everybody's doing it, and so I thought, well, how can I do this a little bit differently and see if there's any play in that? So I found this fence that actually has like a hexagonal versus a square shape, and played around with what that would mean. This isn't really like a very strong piece or anything because of the whole zeitgeisty project, but yeah. But it did lead to, and this will be a little bit hard to see in this, playing with this ribbon, and they have a whole section on people doing type with ribbon. And again, very zeitgeisty, started off with very straight letter forms, and I thought, well, you know, everybody else is kind of doing that. What can I do that's a little bit different? And so I started playing with what the materiality of ribbon and how it could create curves. And so I decided to actually do a script face, which nobody really had done before. And this is kind of like my working Illustrator file, just to give you a sense of like how my head works and my processes. And it ended up turning into this, right? So nice little, whatever, fun font. But this isn't really the end product, and this isn't the part that actually interests me. The part that really interested me was, how could I turn this into a physical thing, and how could I make this a template for use? And so this is technically the actual typeface. So you're able to type, creates these ribbons with basically folding template, right? From there, you know, pair it with the actual type, blah, blah, blah. You're like, I want to make thank you. Turns into this ribbon. And what I do is actually print that out, lay it on top of the ribbon, score it, and then it allows me to easily do this. And the interesting thing that I find is that that template then becomes this sort of miscommunication or discommunication, because when you type it out, there's no possible way for you to actually read it like this, right? So in theory, you could create these secret notes that someone would actually have to physically like fold for them to actually get the communication. So that's a part of something that, you know, both Keetra and I are interested in is this sort of like hidden meanings and miscommunications. And then actually some other people have used it in sites and whatnot. So this is actually a really great site based that talks about paper and origami and whatnot. So those are kind of like the big physical things. In amongst there, I did this, like, you know, play on, like, ASCII art in the real world, whatever. Nice, funny thing. But what I was really interested in is computational type. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit because I think, A, I have a unique experience in that. And B, I think it has a lot of corollary to what the people are doing in three-dimensional typography. You know, it's a lot of experimentation. It's a lot of play. So I use code to do a lot of this. So this is a script that I wrote. And sorry if I get technical to the non-designers out there, but this is where my head is at. And for designers, this is hopefully interesting. Write some code that creates dashes and randomizes those things. So small little plays. This takes vector forms, and all the vertices and the points in these paths are connected via multicolored triangles. And, you know, like, how does that make new typography? New letter forms. And so those were, like, real quick experiments. I'm going to talk a little bit about a larger project. So if for the designers out there, letter forms are vector graphics, and that's what you'll see up in the... I get to use laser pointer. Awesome. Top left there. So vector graphic is defined by math, and you can scale it up and down. But what happens is to view it on screen or on the computer, it has to be turned into what's called a bitmap. And so that's turned into these pixels up here. So this is Courier New at 12 points, right, on the screen. There's a whole bunch of math. There's a lot of, like, technical stuff that goes into, like, how they determine what this looks like and what's the best for it to look like Courier, you know, infinitely scalable. So I decided, well, what happens if we turn that process around? What if we take the bitmap and try and extract out the letter forms from that? And so what this process does is it actually goes around the bitmap and draws these lines and then turns them into new letter forms. And so I was really interested in what this process was like. So just real quickly, this is what the whole, like, font set of Courier New 12-point would look like. This is Helvetica Bold 12. And then this is, like, Snell Roundhand 12. And what I'm looking for is, like, these new forms and letter forms and techniques that come out of something, a system or a process that you have no idea what the actual end result is going to look like. And it also expresses the sort of eccentricity of the process that I'm doing and all the fallacies that go into, like, oh, I'm trying to turn a bitmap into a vector and, like, of course that's going to fail miserably and not look like the actual original. And I'm not interested in actually doing that. I'm interested in this sort of, like, new form that is extracted from that. And so how could I actually use that? So here's Helvetica layered from various point sizes on top of each other and turned into sort of a new typographic treatment. That's great. I'm going to talk real quickly about this. This is a highly experimental... Well, no, not even. It's just completely not useful whatsoever, is what I meant. But it does kind of employ a process that I'm really interested in. And I think, actually, 3D, turning things into 3D, does this exact same thing, which is tool breaking or using a material that it's not what it's not intended for. So type is always... a lot of times created in Illustrator, you know, as a first step. And it's supposed to be that it's perfect, right? It doesn't matter what size it is, it's going to look great. You know, Helvetica this size is going to look almost the same as Helvetica super huge, right? But everyone always talks about that in terms of, like, it getting bigger and bigger and bigger. What I want to do is flip that on its head and say, like, well, what if you get so small that the limitations of the program and the math that it goes into it starts breaking it. So what I did was I scaled these down by 0.1%, 0.1%, 0.1% until it got to a point where Illustrator, because it needs to be fast and no one ever needs something that tiny, it doesn't need that math anymore, those digits. And so, if you know, like in high school, you'll remember significant digits, right? Illustrator only goes to like 3 or 4, I forget, decimal places. So when you scale it down enough and then scale it back up to its original size, all these vectors pop into these weird places and create these forms. And obviously this looks like hell, right? This is a disgusting font. But if you start playing with other things, it starts to create really new forms that I think are really interesting, you know, and I don't have a head for how they're actually used in anything, so I just do stupid little type treatments like this and say, oh, that kind of looks nice, right? This is where Keetra comes into our whole process, and she turns things into beautiful stuff, which you'll see later. This next project goes back to collecting. So all designers have thousands of fonts, or hundreds of fonts, and they're interested in that, and they have, you know, collections. And I thought, well, what's the personality of a whole font collection like? And how can I express that in a new way? So what I did was this real quick, this is kind of like how I go about my process. I'm like, oh, I have this idea, let's throw it in Illustrator. So this is five fonts that are just sliced together, right? Just totally picked random. Now what happens when you actually write the code and give this to someone who has a huge font collection? And what it does is it starts slicing it, turning it into like letter forms like this. And then I just randomize the color in this case. So this is the letter L. This person has 701 fonts installed on their system. And that's fine and dandy, but what happens when you give it to a whole bunch of people? What are the similarities? What are the differences? The J doesn't express it as well as the K. If you also notice, I'm obsessed with my initials, so I use it for everything. So I apologize. And what I found was, you know, like here, this is probably a little bit more italic. This is a really bold one. You know, and it gives a little bit of an idea of like what that person's font collection is like, right? Everyone has their own set of like installed fonts that they're constantly using. The really interesting thing that I found was how often this shape appears in every single one. These big blocks, right? And that's because this font, Black Oak, is installed on everyone's computer, and it just happens to be this really wide font. And so it takes up this enormous amount of space, but as well as Zapfino's in everyone's as well. And it's a really huge font. And so that was something that I found that was really interesting. Oh, this is not what I want. Here's another example of an ampersand and a T. That's all good. Okay, so this is the final project. And I have an editing problem where I don't know how to not show you every single thing I ever do. That has to do with type, so I apologize. This gets back to somewhat 3D and exploring this sort of tension between 2D, 3D, and it's an exploration that Keetra and I are collaborating on and really trying to extend beyond like this sort of basic exploration. So the idea is that it's called double speak. So one word is made up of another word. So in the top example, explore is made up by the word achieve. Bottom one, words, is made up by truth. And so I'm trying to play with these double meanings, mismeanings, giving another angle to something. And then I started playing around with, well, you know, like how, just what do these forms look like? Because it's a very basic level, a difficult problem to solve to make actually look halfway decent. And then recently we were, Keetra and I were asked by Good Magazine to develop a little spread that was about work. And so what we wanted to do was, because we're both interested in this idea of mistakes being really, really great things, and by taking mistakes and turning them into something new, it's pretty amazing, right? So here we've got the word amazing, and it's made up by the word mistake, right? Simple. So I started playing around. This is my playing around, and is boring and like, oh, kind of interesting. Keetra comes into the picture, you know, and is like, hey, you know, like we could do something really cool instead of your boring thing. And so she starts playing around with this and adding, you know, levels of depth that my, you know, head doesn't come around. So this was kind of the final spread that we had. So it says embrace the amazing mistake. And I think it turned out really, really well. We were surprised. and yeah, so I doubly thank you. Yeah.
Does anyone have any questions?
Are any of the typefaces being sold? Are any of the product of any of the 3D fonts that
were not to our knowledge.
Yeah, the handmade font.
The handmade font is the...
It's a, I believe they sell a variety of... They're not actually, like, TrueType or OpenType. They're actually just letter forms, and you can purchase the family as, like, a Photoshop file. So you manually move and typeset it.
Yes? Just, well, we did research for like 2 years for American Craft, and we constantly were looking on the internet primarily, and then we would just print them out and we would just tack them onto our board. And then when we decided that we had enough work for a book, Emily and I started contacting the artist, and then they would tell us of other artists that we should contact. And we wanted to have a variety. We didn't want it just to be graphic designers. We also wanted to have photographers and like Jen Lockie, who's a well-known craft artist. And so we wanted diversity. And I would imagine that the internet was our biggest source of inspiration, of gathering.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Anyone? Would you talk about the design studio, Rational Beauty, that you and Emily set up?
Well, Rational Beauty, we've been in business for probably 2 years now, and we primarily work on publication work, and we do small identity projects, and for organizations like MAD or Socrates Sculpture Park. We recently just got another project from Harlem.
Studio Museum in Harlem.
And we're always looking to do more book projects, and we have some ideas for other books, but we have been really busy working on like publication work. So we're trying to figure out how to strike a balance between play and experimentation, which was really, really inspiring for us to look at all of the different contributors, because as Emily pointed out, it's really about play and failure, and a lot of these failures turn into something really kind of amazing. So I guess Rational Beauty is trying to figure out how to strike that balance between play and practical work.
And bring more experimentation into the daily work as well. As I'm sure all of you guys can
relate to. So.
What?
Well, we have a huge appetite for craft projects and making. So we have projects on certain artists that we think have been overlooked, and then also trying to start curating, trying to put craft artists with designers for them to come up with their own projects, because we met so many amazing American craft artists in the last 3 years. And sometimes their education is not based on design, it's more about making. And then where designers we're feeling is all about ideas, and sometimes they're not as good about making. And so to try to put those two brains together and to see what kind of projects would come out of that. Whether that would end up being a book or products or
experiments?
It's experiments. We're not sure. I mean, I guess our next challenge is to figure out how to get funding to do these kind of projects that are really dear to our hearts. And more graphic design type projects, whereas we were interested in fashion, and it's a big inspiration for both of us. So we were thinking about possibly going to Antwerp and looking at how graphic design has influenced the fashion community in Antwerp and documenting it in kind of a book format. But these are very, like, just kind of out there. Not sure if we can funnel it in with our day-to-day. And the thing about American Craft, we were able to generate part of a redesign of a magazine. You have time to sit there and kind of look and think about how you want to communicate the content of a publication. So we were able to use that research when we saw a whole wall, and was like J.K. was saying about the matrix type. Yeah, we saw so much of that. Or the Google map. I mean, there's tons of it out there, and it's interesting to me when there's so many people that are interested in that idea, then you know that, wow, you have something. Or a photographer is beginning to construct type from a certain angle, as you were talking about. And we saw all of that. We saw this repetition happening, and that was really very, very exciting to see. But having a magazine to help, having that time to like think about it, we were able to do the book. Now that maybe we'll have a client that will give us that kind of time to kind of think. So it's the challenge,
the balance.
So,
yeah, I think
it's a good question. It's a really good question.
I mean, I think like I can almost just speak to like JK's what he talked about tonight. You know, there's like there's people that were working very formally and instinctually, and then there's people that are able to kind of see into the skeleton, you know, that have had maybe the design education and background that has made them aware of those structures and can extrapolate and move from those points, almost more of a rebellion or exploration in some ways, versus like Jen Lockey, who the craft artist, who just was really attracted to ampersands, and it was almost like visual attraction and some of the meaning into like dollar signs or the pound sign. So I think maybe the way the projects kind of came about and their interests were informed by maybe different points of view.
And it seems
that answered that.
Yeah, and it seemed like we were really attracted when we, because we got so many projects in, and when we started editing it down, it was really a challenging process. But what came up was for us was like the personal, somehow the author's personality really got into the form, whether it was Jen Lockey or, I mean, it was a lot of care that went into that exploration. It wasn't someone who just scribbled it out. But we didn't realize that until we started contacting all the artists, and there was always this amazing kind of backstory and people trying to figure out how to communicate with in a different environment, like getting a little bit off the computer, but being inspired by the computer, it seemed really relevant. It seemed like when you see so many people making expressions with typography, and that, you know, we now can just type on a screen really quickly, And some people would take weeks or days to like make a form. Just there's something very interesting in that. Because at one point, making typography was really painstaking. Today, it's really not. You just get on your computer. And it's interesting that so many people feel so compelled to create these forms and create new modes of communication.
Thank you so much for this wonderful discussion. And now we can move on to the book sale. I heard that this book, 3D Typography, is the second best-selling of Mark Batty Publications.
That's right? That's what we heard today, which makes us very happy.
How exciting.
So...